Toodle-loo-ma-loo-ma-toodle-loo-ma-loo-ma-toodle-i-ay. Any umbrellas to mend today. Bring your parasol, it may be small, it may be big.
Yeah, it was quite an eventful session, the last one. We started with Wally, well, doing tablecloth jujitsu, I believe is what we ended up calling it. Somehow managed to escape the clutches of this smoke demon that had been summoned by Decastries, by Louis Decastries, in the hotel where they were having breakfast. Actually, is it Louis Decastries? Is that his name? Or is it another Decastries? I don't know. Anyway, Decastries. And yes, she managed to escape.
Julian Decastries, I think.
Julian Decastries. No, there's too many Decastries here. That's the problem. Let me just...
Mr. fucking Decastries.
Monsieur.
To you.
Monsieur Decastries.
It's a Decastrophe.
It is.
Ouch.
Okay, yeah. No, it is Louis Decastries. It is Louis Decastries. But she managed to escape after causing somewhat of a scene in Claridge's. It was Claridge's, wasn't it?
It was. And it was a very nice camel hair coat that I actually had to use.
Oh, it was a coat.
Yeah, it was lovely. It was really lovely.
The true victim here.
Yes. Let's all pour one out for the camel hair coat.
Indeed. Because the paramental entity, actually, I think it creates itself out of the tablecloth and bits of petit four, which is a terrifying concept.
It's awful.
Terrifying concept, yeah. Battenberg, you were attacked by Battenberg cake.
I've lost my sweet tooth forever.
Which is a terrifying prospect. But you made it, you managed to get back in one piece to Watson's Antiquities, where after, you know, getting your breath back, I think you were lying down on the sofa, or someone, no, Rita was lying on the sofa. I don't know why she was the one on the sofa. Oh, of course, she'd just come from hospital.
She's hurt.
Because I've just got out of hospital. I've been pushed home on a tram in a wheelchair. I need to recoup.
Yes, and your recuperation was rudely interrupted by a big pebble, river stone, being thrown through the front window, causing no doubt a deal of consternation. Turns out it was thrown by a rather thuggish man called Magwitch. Or Magwitch, as we're supposed to call him, but it just doesn't sound right to my ears. So we will call him Magwitch from now on. Yeah, he was not a very nice person at all, and seems like he was sending you a not very subtle message. Well, from his employer, let's say. And I think you deduced...
We decided it was Drummle, didn't we?
You decided it was Drummle, yeah. Whether it was or not, I think later on you did discover it probably was, because Wally returned the compliment via the sharp aim of a couple of street urchins selling roast chestnuts out of an oil drum. And Drummle seemed to take it as a very clear message back. But in between...
Both ladies were in on that one.
Oh, were they? Yeah. It doesn't surprise me that Rita was involved.
Rita was the instigator, actually.
Yeah, I was forced into it, yeah. I was happy to delegate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In between, we had Milton and Emery decided to pay another visit to Birgit von Kant to try and get her to deal with Decastries, who seems to be the one causing the most inconvenience to you at the moment. Although Birgit herself seems to be sending these toad-like Nagai creatures to kill your friends as well. So, you know, she's not a particularly nice person either. And especially when it turned out her solution would be to kidnap Decastries and richly sacrifice him to Igonolak and use his entrails for some unspeakable acts of depravity with Milton.
Yes. I think when we started down this path, we didn't quite think through the consequences.
No, I went a little off-piste there. You could say I was a man possessed to a certain degree.
You could say that.
And Emery's excuse is he was very drunk.
Very, very drunk. And that's his permanent, it's a permanent excuse he has for everything he does, though, Emery, so...
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, now... Emery decided that he would actually take matters into his own hands to try and either get hold of the book beforehand or to find out who else is involved in the auction, because he headed off on his own, actually, to the hotel where Paul Fletcher is.
Wait, was I on my own?
You were.
Oh, gosh. Oh, right. Okay. Yes, I've forgotten that bit.
Very boldly, yeah. I mean, Emery isn't used to traveling solo or investigating solo, but yeah, he's headed to the Broadgate Hotel next to Liverpool Street, and that's where we will pick up, actually, with Emery entering the rather grand lobby of the Broadgate Hotel. It's a beautiful late Victorian building, very grand, with Gothic flourishes and the the lobby is marble and oak. And yes, it's a very nice establishment. And yeah, you head in with Paul Fletcher in mind.
Yes, I know his room number. So I think rather than approaching the desk, I am simply going to go straight up to his room and start that way.
Perfect.
Because otherwise I'm going to end up getting so tied up in knots that it's going to end up being a disaster.
Yes, you don't want to be doing any social roles.
No.
Yes, yes. And yeah, you head up to the... Well, there's an elevator, thankfully. As I remember from listening back to Sorry Enigma, we don't want Emery climbing stairs.
We don't. Especially not to the 8th floor.
No. Stairs and Dr. Emery do not go well together. But yes, you go up in the elevator to the top floor and head to the east side of the hotel. And there, Paul Fletcher's room at 807. And yeah, I guess you knock on the door.
I do.
And you hear some movement inside, and the door opens, and a hunched, sort of somewhat weaselly-looking man answers the door. He's got some papers in his hands. He doesn't have an entire room full of china crockery, by the way, but he has got that hunched-over look, and you see he's got these sort of dark, brooding eyes. And he says, "Are you room service?"
"No, I'm frightfully sorry to bother you, Mr. Fletcher. This is a very delicate matter pertaining to the auction you've come over here to take part in. And shall we say, well, the Irby Clavis." "Might we speak in private?"
"I suppose so. You seem to know, you seem to have the advantage of me. Who are you?"
"I'm sorry, frightfully rude of me. My name is Dr. Emery Watson of Watson's Antiquities, and I think I have some important information to share with you."
"Well, I suppose you better come in. I've been very busy today. I'm going through my astronomical charts and papers." And he starts kind of shuffling some papers together. And you see the top paper seems to be a drawing of some kind of star or nebula. And I'll show you what it looks like. Okay. It's a very peculiar drawing. Now that, of course, is a colour photograph.
Yes.
But you swear, looking at it, as he quickly shoves it underneath, that the middle of the nebula seems to be an eye.
It does rather look like one, yes.
Hmm.
Emery will try very hard not to think about that.
Yes. And he says, "Well, look, are you representing an agent or the seller? What do you want exactly?"
"I come here primarily to warn you that I understand you've travelled over here from South Africa, and you may not be overly familiar with the situation here in London, but I thought it was only fair to warn you that the entire situation surrounding the sale of this book has become complicated, that not just messy, but the bloody kind of messy, that people have been dying, that there does seem to be some degree of, well, you are a man of learning, and you understand these things, these matters that we're dealing with, and that the knowledge contained in that book isn't just academic, right? I don't think I'm overstepping when I say that. And you know what people are willing to do for that kind of knowledge."
"Well, sir, you seem to know more than I would suspect from a elderly scholar. What do you know? What more do you know of this? Do you know the dark history of this tome and its connection to wars and destruction over the centuries, the millennia?"
"I have heard stories, yes. I must admit my knowledge of this particular volume is incomplete, but yes, I do understand that this was picked up as loot in Austria last century, early last century, and that it has been through multiple hands, that the Castries family themselves are in the process of trying to reacquire it as well, and you must be very careful of them. And I simply wondered whether... because you are in this unfamiliar situation in what I presume is a relatively unfamiliar country with people you don't know, whether we might be able to assist each other."
"Maybe. You see, my interest in this volume is more than just academic, you see, sir."
"Of course."
It is, yes. You see, it's all to do with the new nebula that I recently discovered, NGC 5189, and its connection to the destruction of Troy 3,300 years ago. Of course, the Royal Society thought it was complete nonsense, and they're fools. They're fools. They can't see the deep connection. You see, it's Baylor. It's the Baylor. The nebula itself is Baylor, the Eye of Baylor, the destroyer of cities. And this is why, in fact, Troy itself was destroyed. They were not paying proper attention to the heavens and the conjunction of stars and galaxies, you see. Yes, that is exactly why. It's all Baylor, yes. You see? You follow me?
I do. I rather wish I didn't, but I do.
And you see, this Dicastries, they are mere charlatans, sorcerers, black magic and all this sort of nonsense. They don't seem to understand. This isn't magic, this is science, man. This is science, man.
I quite understand. I myself am rather versed in the conflation of these esoteric studies and what people consider to be superstition and magic, but is in fact, yes, a form of science. I mean, at some point, if we remain acquaintances, I must discuss with you some rather intriguing ideas about the nature of multidimensional space and its relationship to time. And anyway, sorry, I digress.
No, this digression, this is exactly it. Scale and relativity. You see, NGC 5189 is exactly 3,300 light years away from Earth. Therefore, the light that left it 3,300 years ago was at the precise moment that we are seeing today. It was at the precise moment of the destruction of Troy. You see, it all connects. It all connects.
It does, rather. But forgive me for perhaps my ignorance when it comes to matters of physics and astronomy, because my field of academic studies, I must admit, is anthropology. But my experiences with these matters lead me to believe that the very dimensions of space themselves are mutable. And while from my limited understanding of Mr. Einstein's studies, he talks about how the speed of light is a constant, but does that mean that the space that it travels through is always a constant distance? Or if that itself is mutable, might these factors also be mutable?
Sir, I believe your understanding of Einstein is somewhat superficial, nay, trivial, of course, because time itself is merely our perception of a fourth dimension that we cannot perceive because of our linearity, you see. You see, it is a physical dimension in exactly the same way as the other three are physical, but we perceive it as being somehow the ticking of a clock. It is, of course, complete nonsense, because the past, the present, the future, they all exist simultaneously and endlessly loop.
Oh, Dr. Fletcher, I do wish that it were the case that we cannot perceive these things, but the horrible truth is we can, and under the right circumstances, with the right knowledge and the right approaches, we do, and it is not a pleasant thing at all.
No. But I have much, though, this conversation is interesting, intriguing. Nay, I feel like I'm imparting great gouts of wisdom into your rather limited imagination. But what is your purpose here? You're warning me about Dicastries. I know Dicastries is a fool and possibly a dangerous one at that, but I intend to acquire this book and leave back for Durban in the morning.
My fear is that Dicastries has made attempts upon the life, and in some cases successful, of a number of his rivals when it comes to the purchase of this book. And I have myself made some studies of various means by which perhaps he might be prevented or at least entangled in his attempts. And I did wonder whether perhaps I might be able to help protect you from his machinations in return for the simple pleasure of your company and accompanying you on this and learning from you, because you are clearly a man of great wisdom, and I would very much like to have a better understanding of this existential threat that we face.
Very good, very good. I see. You mean reduce the competition, take them out the picture, that sort of thing?
Indeed, yes.
Very good. I like the way you're thinking. So what do you propose? Should we meet the auction is, I believe, scheduled for tomorrow, and we will receive a notification of the premises by 6 p.m.
Yes. Well, you see, this is the complication, that because of my somewhat fractious relationship with de Castries and his ilk, I have not been formally invited to the auction, and therefore I am not in a position to meet you there, simply because I will not be notified where it is. If you would do me the honour of letting me know when you are notified, then I would put myself and my associates at your disposal to ensure that de Castries does not perform the same acts of black mischief upon your person as he has upon his other rivals.
Very good. Do you have a number?
Of course, yes. I run a bookshop in the East End. This is my business card, and you'll find the telephone number on there.
He takes from you your one business card that is with the corners all crumpled and bent with the creases down the middle. He looks at it.
Cat's paw print on the back.
And he says, I suppose, puts it in his top pocket. He says, well, I must continue with my studies. The Eye of Baelor is always watching, sir, is always watching.
Yes, and may we escape its most terrible gaze.
Indeed. Remember, it saw you 3,300 years ago, sir.
Yes.
And with that, we will end the scene, because I think otherwise we just...
Talk bollocks at each other for hours?
Talk bollocks for another hour, yes.
I could listen to that.
So let's cut to... I want to cut to Milton, because you're obviously back in... Let's put you back in your premises, maybe after your rather bracing encounter with Birgit von Kant. And what are you doing in the pie shop?
What hour would it be? What?
I'd say it's sort of middle of the afternoon, so early afternoon, let's say. Early afternoon. We've still got a few hours. You got some time left today.
Right. Okay. So the meeting was in the morning, and then
yes.
I'm kind of a bit of a state, to be honest. I'm kind of trembling. I've had a few drinks to try and calm my nerves. I'm trying to prepare food. I'm a little bit distracted. I'm aware that I may have been involved in something quite disturbing, but I'm a bit fuzzy on the details. You know, I'm trying to sort of block it out.
And whilst sitting there, maybe having a port, well, I don't know, what were you drinking? Brandy, port?
No, port sounds good, but a port.
Port, okay, yeah. A nice port. The bell goes on the door, and you see a young lad come in. He's got a cloth cap, and he's wearing shorts, knee-high socks, and scuffed, dirty leather shoes. He comes in and he says, "Are you Mr. Blythe?"
Yes, boy. What do you want?
He says, "Oh, this geezer gave me a shilling. He said I should request your presence in his carriage." Bit of a ponce, I thought he was. He had a big hat on. Excuse me, French.
You're not interested in the black pudding? No?
Well, I've only got a shilling. I mean, if you... Maybe you could give me it as a tip. Or maybe give me... This is terrible. You could give me as a tip.
You can have a taster.
So you hold out.
Yeah, I've got some just here. So I always keep a plate of it within arm's reach.
So he sort of holds himself up on the counter and takes a bite off the end of the black pudding. And he says, "Oh, that's right, tasty, governor. If I've got a bit, you know, once I've got a few more shillings in my pocket, I'll come and buy a whole one for myself.
Tell me more about this gentleman who requests my a presence in his carriage, did you say?
Yeah, he's just outside. I don't know why he didn't come in himself, lazy bastard. But he said, excuse me, French again, but he said you'd know who he is.
Okay, I'll get my coat. On your way, boy, I'll go and see what this gentleman is interested in.
Right, thanks, mister. I mean, I wouldn't get into a carriage with a strange geezer with a funny hat like that, but it's up to you, of course. And then he just heads out.
Funny hat? What kind of funny hat?
Oh, you'll see. And then he just runs off down the street.
Yeah, bloody hell. Okay, well, I kind of tentatively stick my head out of the door of the shop and look around for the carriage.
And yeah, I mean, maybe you were expecting to see a handsome carriage, but it's actually quite odd. It's well, I mean, there are still maybe a few of these around. It's a horse-drawn carriage, something from, well, you know, 50 years ago. There's still a few of them around. People still like the odd horse-drawn ride around town. But yeah, it's a dark carriage. It's a black carriage pulled by two horses, and there's a ashy-faced driver sitting up top, and he sort of cracks the reins a couple of times to get the horses to calm down. They're stamping and champing, and then the door the carriage opens up, And a deep, sonorous voice says, Mr. Blythe, please, step up inside.
Well, I glance up and down the street and then kind of, coyly make my way over to the carriage. What the bloody hell are you getting yourself into, Milton? And, I'll try and approach and see if I can recognise the gentleman inside.
As you come level with the open door, you look inside and you see it's your friend. It's your friend from the hospital. And this time he's wearing a frock coat and a tall, dark hat, like a top hat, actually. And he says, come on.
Come on what?
Come on, Blythe. We've got places to go.
Places? Where? I've got a shop to run.
Well, you'll see. Don't worry about that. There's more important things than a shop. Blythe, come on. Don't be a fool. Get in, man.
Right. Well, I'm kind of, yes. I'm extremely nervous, but I'm going to hop into the carriage against my better judgment.
Okay, so you seat yourself down opposite him in the carriage, and he leans forward and he says, I don't think we've actually been formally introduced, Mr. Blythe. I'm Mr. Dunstan, of course. And he holds out a gloved hand.
From the hospital?
Yes, and other places.
Would I have seen you elsewhere?
Maybe not, but I've been there always, Mr. Blythe.
Something tells me there's some truth in that.
Yes. Well, you can just call me Jack, of course.
Okay.
People seem to like that name.
Jack?
Yes. Anyway, and then he raps with his cane on the roof and the carriage pulls off. And he says, we have several places to visit, Mr. Blythe.
And is this the best transport you can get your hands on these days?
He says, that's a very interesting perspective, Mr. Blythe. These days, you see, these days. What are these days? Maybe not the same for you as for me.
Well, your method of transport does date you somewhat.
Indeed it does. Dates and times very important, you see. And I ran out of time, Mr. Blythe.
How?
I guess I'm going to have to explain it to you, aren't I?
Well, I'm certainly not making a lot of sense of... You're not giving me much, to be honest.
Well, you'll see when we visit the... Let's call them the loci, the sites. You see, I only managed four. My great work is incomplete, Mr. Blythe.
And what does that have to do with me?
Everything. Everything. You may be seemingly unaware, but inside, you know.
I'm becoming aware, Jack.
And over the course of the next 2 hours, you are taken to four places in Whitechapel. To Hanbury Street, to Berner Street, the Bucks Row, and to Dorset Street. And then you head somewhere familiar at the end. You head to the city, to Mitre Square. And he says, I'm going to have to retcon what I said before. I only managed five. You see, my memory is going. I only managed five. And we need another five, you see. The great working.
You need another five?
Indeed, and much though you think I may be here and able to complete my work, I am not, you see. That is why you... Blythe must carry on the great work.
I believe this particular line of work might be a little outside my skill set. I generally keep to, I was going to say butchery, but that's probably not going to help me much, is it?
Blythe, you do yourself a disservice. You may be resisting somewhat, but you have a piece of that entity inside you, that crude depravity gonna lack. He'll help.
Well, I can't say he's been helping me so far.
No, well, we serve a greater master than him. He doesn't have the finesse.
We do.
Yes, the great one under the city. And it is your job, like it was mine, to open the eye fully. It can only be accomplished by making the required sacrifice. People think I was a butcher, a maniac, a madman. No. There is a clear and precise purpose. Each of these points where the ritual was enacted is in a specific location, each one mapping out the external dimensions of the eye and the inner iris. I kept trying to send you to Dives' bloody office, but you never went, did you?
Well, there's a lot of stairs.
I did what I could.
But to what end? What is our purpose here?
Our purpose is to transform this city. To take it from the past into the future, a glorious, bright, and glittering future, where all will be screams of agony and ecstasy, where the true depravity of man shall be enacted. That is what Biatis will bring to London, to old, stinking, festering London. There'll be towers of glass and steel. There'll be carnage in the streets. None of this quaint nonsense we've got used to. The pubs and the riverside walks, no. There'll be flashing steel and chrome and death of every street corner, every residence. It'll be glorious, my life, glorious.
I'm a man of simple tastes. I'm not looking to transform a city or anything. I'm just after a snack now and again.
And then he puts his hand on yours and... For the first time, you feel that although it is sort of solid, I mean, it's touching you, clearly, it also somehow feels like cold and empty when it grasps you. He says, Blythe, you will do this willingly or unwillingly, but you will do it, or you will be destroyed. Your god can only provide protection for so long. We are getting impatient. Look out the window now, he says. He points.
I look out.
You see? Dozens, dozens. Look at these degenerates. The festering scum of London. You just pick one at random, take them down an alley and slice them up. It's easy, Blythe.
I want to throw myself from the carriage.
Very good, very good.
I'm going to say, sod this and jump out.
Okay. He's not even going to try and stop you. He just has this look of infinite disappointment on his face. Like a parent whose child has wet the bed yet again. And you just push the door open and dive tumbling forward. And I would like to make a dexterity roll.
Where am I?
Oh, your dex is 20.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Oh, oops.
Yeah. Oops. And yeah, with the grace of a writing desk being thrown out of the top story of a block of flats, you land with a massive crash, roll forward a couple of times and hit a dustbin, and you take a point of damage.
Please tell me that as Milton's landed on the ground trying to break his fall, he's cut both of his palms open with nice slits.
Fantastic. Yeah, maybe there was a broken bottle there and that's what causes the damage. As the blood drips down from your hands and you try and pick the glass, the shard of glass out of it.
No, what have I got myself into?
And Milton, and as you're thinking that, a sort of a grubby, straggle-haired woman who just happens to be standing there bends down and says, "You all right there, Governor? You look like you've had a bit of a tumble."
"I'll be fine, madam. Thank you. Thank you."
"Well, I'm not doing much at the moment, so if you want another tumble, it's a crown."
"I've had a bit of a busy day, okay? I just think I need to go and lay down for a bit."
"All right, well, I'm here every day, every night. You're a right nice fella. You got kind eyes."
"Well, that's the only bit that's left, to be honest."
And we will leave Milton there, picking himself up out the ground, off the ground, after that, well, disturbing little conversation. And we will cut over. Well, I guess you're still in Fleet Street, were you, Milton? Sorry, Rita and Wally. Or had you departed the scene of the crime, the scene of the incident?
I think we had... Hadn't we started kind of walking away, but in a purposeful and not suspicious way?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think you had.
They were looking. We saw them looking around quizzically, and then off we went.
Yeah, you saw Drummle looking with a look of consternation, as if he clearly understood the meaning of your message. And I believe Scott said, "That won't come back to bite us in the arse, I'm sure."
No, consequence-free, 100%.
Yeah, you're making a sharp exit then from the scene of your crime. Where to? What's on your minds?
Well, Rita, that was exhilarating. Do you have any other acts of petty vandalism that you wish to engage in this afternoon? Because my blood is going. Let's do it.
Oh, okay. Right. I'd have to have a think. I mean, I heard something, you know, if you go up a tall building and you drop a penny off it, it picks up a lot of speed and it would just tear through a person. Is that too much?
Oh, well, do you have a specific person in mind or is this just random death dealing? I don't know if I'm comfortable.
Not really.
Yes. There's a few people that I would absolutely drop a penny on from a great height with great satisfaction, but...
We could go and shoot mudlarks, you know, along the Thames. The folks that, you know, they're collecting the stuff. And Rita looks around and lifts up her blanket and she's like, I got me gun.
Wait, mudlarks? You mean people, humans and not birds?
Yeah, the people.
I'm rather good at skeet shooting, actually. So if you wanted to go target shooting, I've got a couple of rifles back at my pied-à-terre that are... We could go shooting, for sure. I don't know if I'm up for the most dangerous game today, if you catch my drift.
There's something good that you're talking about, because we need to get ready for the auction. You know, all kinds of crazy stuff might happen at the auction, so... I think getting those rifles and getting ourselves... What do the Americans say? Like, match fit. Do they say, get yourself match fit?
I'm sure I don't know what you're talking about. But, you know, if you're looking for something a little bit more elegant to wear to the auction, I have, not to brag, but I have rather an extensive closet, and I do believe I have some things that would fit you.
Oh, that's fantastic. So we wouldn't need to steal any clothes, then?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I've got a huge closet and full of women's clothes and men's clothes, actually. I have something of a storied past and they do tend to leave things behind. So we can all look a little bit tarted up, if you like.
Oh, that's great. I mean, to be honest, I don't completely feel that I've arrived at the full detective outfit that really suits my demeanor and my figure. So maybe I could, you know, mix it up a bit with what you got. If you got so, let's go to your place and get the guns and some new rags on.
Oh, absolutely, darling. Absolutely. Don't mind the mess. I was developing some photographs, so might be a little bit of a whirlwind went through there. But don't mind that. Let's head on over to my place.
That's fine. Yeah, my great-grandfather used to develop his own photographs. Left a terrible mess all over the place, especially in his later years. Wasn't a very good thing to really, you know, you didn't want to go round there with his lunch, you know.
Right. Well, you know, it's a bad habit and eating near the stock bath, but...
Well, I don't think he had much choice in the matter. But, I mean, that didn't really have anything to do with photography. But anyway, let's just lay on.
All right, then.
I just got to tell you, Jen, you don't know this, but there was this exact same scene with Nikki and Rita, where Nikki decided to dress Rita up properly for some event. So it's wonderful. Wonderful.
All of us just, you know, we want to take Rita under our wing. She's just terribly brave and delightful, and we just want her to present her best face forward.
I mean, slightly psychopathic, but other than that, a delight.
I haven't really had the chance to test it out.
And it's now canon that in this universe, dropping a penny off a building will go straight through someone's head and kill them. Because it is an urban myth.
You can, yeah. Especially if it goes edge down. Just chunk, just right through.
Just bisect them completely, straight down the middle. Okay, well, we will dissolve to the two of you trying on frocks in Wally's complete bomb site of an apartment. It's hard to tell where the wardrobe starts and the floor begins and the floor ends.
My cleaning lady quit, and I'm afraid I have no natural talents for housekeeping. You know, I'm really more of a follow-my-bliss kind of a person. But, you know, I have lovely things. This one's very nice. A silk beading, and maybe it's a little fussy for you. I don't know. Do you prefer clean lines, or...?
I'd kind of like a don't-mess-with-me, I'm-a-detective kind of thing, with a feminine kind of twist to it, you know?
Oh, okay, so tailoring, kind of clean lines is what we're looking for here. And, you know, maybe a little bit of a broad shoulder sort of a look, you know, make you look a little bit more intimidating.
Yeah, but I could have a more feminine kind of shirt. You know, something, you know, a little bit frilly to show that I'm sensitive.
Ah, I know exactly what you need. And Wally pulls out an extremely kind of structured sort of, I don't know, modernist kind of like gray coat with sort of a broad shoulder and a nipped in waist. But then there's a lovely kind of delicate silk, cream silk chemise blouse that has sort of a draped neckline, just a little bit daring, to go underneath it. And
a little décolletage going on.
A little bit, just a gentle bit of décolletage. Just a little bit. A little bit of collarbone, you know, feminine touch there. And she has a lovely kind of silk flower brooch that, you know, this is an optional thing, you know, maybe to provide a little bit of a softness to the line, if you like. And a kicky little skirt.
What is this podcast turning in? Is this like 1930s fashion podcast?
This is what not to wear, yes.
Well, they'll move on to the gun soon.
Yeah.
Rita's checking the brooch for if it has a long enough pin that she could kind of use in a tight situation if she needed to.
Oh, it absolutely does. I have. I've used it in a tight situation.
In my mind, this is starting out as this makeover and it's going to end up as Ash kitting up in Evil Dead 2.
Yeah. I think that needs to happen because you have an equally chaotic gun room in that was a second bedroom, but is now where you keep your ammunition.
Yeah.
I need at least one hidden, almost hidden pocket and some good places to keep my guns. You know, so some under some feminine curves, there could be somewhere for a holster.
Right. Well, I think that we can sort of drape an overcoat over your shoulders and sort of pin it in the front. And then underneath that back of the overcoat, we could certainly hide a rifle. Are you going to still need your pushchair, the wheelchair? Do we still need to take that with us to the auction?
Now, I know you're working hard pushing me around, but...
Yeah, we hadn't thought about that.
I'm feeling better minute by minute, but I'm also wondering if there's some mileage we can get out of this thing.
Yes, that is exactly what I was thinking. It's sort of an ideal hiding spot for, you know, weapons and ammunition and things of that nature. And, you know, people tend to be a little bit hands-off toward a person in a wheelchair. They tend to give them a little bit of a wide berth. Call it rudeness. call it superstition.
We've definitely got to have the hand rest that flip over and the guns, you know, the attached guns spring up.
Now, do you happen to have any old food, you know, that's on the turn and kind of smells?
Ah, ooh.
Because I'm just thinking, if people come a bit too close and they want to have a bit too much of a look, I could just open something up that's, you know, a jar that doesn't smell too good. And then I think they might not poke their noses round.
Child's lunchbox?
I'm afraid I'm not much of a cook. I don't really have much in the icebox, I'm afraid, except maybe some gin. But I think that, and she pulls out a bowl off of the counter and she's like, this used to be a bowl of fruit. I believe these were apples once. They're a little wizened, I'm afraid.
No eggs. No.
I would imagine that Astrid has champagne, vodka, and chilled lobster in the fridge at all times.
Oh, no. She goes out to eat. She never takes home a doggy bag. That's gauche.
Okay.
Yeah, no, she does have probably several different bottles of liquor. They're not all centrally located. She sort of, you know, takes one and pours herself a drink and sort of drops it in amongst the detritus. So she's probably got several of the same type of alcohol because she couldn't find her gin, so she had to buy another bottle of gin, that sort of thing. So, yes, but there's absolutely nothing edible in the fridge. Nothing at all.
Not even Ritz crackers.
Do you have any medical supplies and things?
Well, I mean, I've got plasters, of course, and some denatured alcohol, I suppose, for wounds. I don't really have much else.
I was thinking maybe we could inject anybody with something if they start prying too much. You know, just like a quiet little...
Ooh, that's a little bit outside of my wheelhouse, I'm afraid. But, you know, I do have a few doctor acquaintances who are known as sort of, I don't know, Dr. Good Times. So I might be able to get a few prescriptions on short notice, but, you know, I'd have to do a little bit of, I think, sweet talking and maybe petty bribery, but...
But that's a good possibility.
Yes, yes.
Fantastic. So I can see you've got a lot of guns here, but what do you think's going to work the best? I guess maybe Rita's at this point just pushing the wheelchair over all the stuff that's on the floor. Just...
Yeah. Well, I mostly have rifles. That's kind of my thing. Daddy loved blood sports, so that's kind of what I trained in. I'm not really much of a handgun person, so I don't really have many of those. But, you know, I've got a few bolt-action rifles, a 22 and a 30-06, and probably a couple of others. I think I have an elephant gun stashed somewhere around here.
Of course.
Should we try and, you know, see how we can secrete them around myself in the wheelchair?
That's a capital idea, darling. And I'm going to investigate the wheelchair, see if there's any kind of, like, good things that I can sort of rig up with what I've got. I mean, I've got a couple of nice luggage bits that maybe I could attach to the wheelchair.
Okay. Do you have any skills in mechanical repair or that sort of thing?
I have a little bit of mechanical repair. I have a 20 in mechanical repair, so basically about as much as you would need to do basic repairs on a camera.
Well, I'll tell you what. Make a mechanical repair roll to see whether you can fully disguise an elephant gun.
Yeah.
In a wheelchair.
I also do have a 25 in disguise, and I don't know if that is a better thing.
You want to disguise yourself, the elephant gun, as an umbrella, maybe?
As an umbrella, yes. That makes a lot more sense to do a little bit of disguise of it, because I have all sorts of accessories here.
I'll let you do that. But you know what? Well, before we do that, I will let everyone do a luck refresh as we're getting close, I think, to a climax of sorts.
All right.
So everyone can make a luck roll, and of course you need to fail the luck roll to... Oh dear, well, Wally...
Failed it.
Okay. Yep. Oh, Emery. Yes. Oh dear, poor old Milton. So Emery and Rita can both get a D10.
Okay.
Oh, 7.
Oh, Watson.
7.
Getting back to respectability.
I don't think Emery's ever been respectable.
All right, moving slightly away from complete degeneracy, I think, is a better way to put it. Yeah, so Wally, you can make a very unlikely mechanical repair roll.
Okay, mechanical repair or disguise?
Oh, disguise, sorry, yes, disguise. You can make it a slightly less unlikely.
Slightly less unlikely, but still pretty unlikely, let's see. Oh! Oh! Ouch! That's a fumble.
Yeah, that's a fumble, a 96.
A fumble with an elephant gun.
Yes.
Well, can we push it?
No, you can't push a fumble. Whilst trying to attach the top of an umbrella to the barrel of your elephant gun, you somehow neglect to realise it is loaded, and you accidentally push down the trigger, and the elephant gun fires up straight through your ceiling and leaves a massive hole, and then you hear a shriek coming from the upstairs apartment, and all hell breaks loose, because you've basically just fired an elephant gun up into your upstairs neighbor's apartment.
Oh God, they already hated me.
Yeah, and about 20 minutes later, the police turn up at your door.
Oh dear.
I think you've already had a run-in with the police. I'm going to say it's the same one.
Oh.
I can't remember their names. No, it can't be because I can't remember their names. A policeman turns up at your door, knocks on the door, and says, "Excuse me, miss, I've had a report of the discharge of a firearm on these premises. Could I inquire what on earth you've been getting up to in there?"
"Oh, officer, I'm so terribly sorry. Oh, as you can see, my apartment is in a bit of disarray. I had some guests and they were not well behaved, and I was putting some things away and something fell from behind the bureau and made a terrible racket. You know, it was all a terrible misunderstanding. Is anyone hurt?"
"No one is hurt. There's a bleeding great hole in your upstairs neighbour's floor. He's not very pleased about it. He said it made him choke on his beans."
"Oh, he does that a lot. Well, it exactly corresponds to a giant hole that I have in my ceiling, which I am likewise not very pleased about, you know, so we can be united in our displeasure. However, I do have a few contacts in building and plastering and that sort of thing, and I do acknowledge I had no idea that was there, but this is my fault for attempting to clean. I'll never try to do that again, but I will repair the floor and the ceiling and whatever else at my own expense. We can expense it to..."
"I should think so too."
"Yes, absolutely."
"Now, miss, would you be so good as to show me your gun license for said firearm?"
"My gun license. Yes, absolutely. Excuse me, sir." And I go back to my very messy file cabinet, and I'm kind of unlocking it and sort of theatrically going through all sorts of things. Let's see, like, oh, so this is the D to my apartment. Sorry, no, you don't need that. That's my, oh, that's my automobile license. Okay, no, we don't need that either. You said firearm license for each individual gun or just general license of some?
You have more? You do. You are aware that it is illegal to possess anything other than a shotgun, and even for that you would need a farmer's certificate.
A farmer's certificate?
These are not farming implements. This seems to be an elephant gun.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I've never used that in my life, officer. I just, you know, it was... This apartment used to be my father's, and I've sort of taken it over. I'm a photographer by trade, and I'm afraid I haven't really gone through.
What on earth do you need an elephant gun for if you're a photographer? There's not many elephants around London. Well, apart from the zoo, I suppose.
You should ask my father that. He's something of a globetrotter. Cyril Vandermeer, the industrialist and explorer. My father, Vandermeer Amalgamated Industries. I'm Astrid W. Vandermeer.
And at this point, I want to make Rita... I would like to ask Rita to make a luck roll as she's sitting in her wheelchair.
This isn't going to go very well. I failed it. 50 against 24.
Right. You only got 24 luck?
I mean, what else is it good for?
Oh, and you even got an increase, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I was on 17 a minute ago.
Yeah, okay, all right. And he says, Miss, why are you sitting in a London hospital wheelchair?
Oh, hello, my good man.
I think the two of you need to accompany me down to the station.
But I'm in a wheelchair, I'm afraid.
Well, you got up here, you can get down again. Now, come on, you two, or I'll have to arrest you.
Oh, dear, that shouldn't be necessary, officer. I certainly, if we could call my father's office, I think that they could probably work this out very quietly. I think that it would be...
Well, you can do that from the station, miss. Right now, you need to accompany me to Bow Street Station, and we will unravel this knotted web of intrigue.
So, Andy says we're about two sessions away from the end. Shall I shoot him?
It's up to you, darling.
I think we might be much closer to the end if you're about to shoot a policeman, but it's up to you. It's up to you.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. I've only got ranged weapons.
Oh, my God.
Ugh. I'm trying to think, is there any role I can do to get him off of my back?
Well, I think you would need to make a hard, maybe even an extreme, it would have to be at least a hard persuade or charm roll at this point.
Or credit rating?
Yeah,
or credit rating. Yes, okay. Yes, that's a good one.
Right. All right. Well, I have a 65 in charm, but only a 55 in credit rating because father hasn't increased my allowance recently.
So yes, it would have to be a hard one or the other.
I will attempt the charm.
If this fails, Rita is going to jump. She's going to jump out of the chair and knock the policeman down. Because she's just going to jump at the, like, it's going to be an amazing jump right at the policeman, okay?
Okay. Fantastic. Go for it.
Oh, God, she's gone feral again.
Oh, God. All right. Well, here we go. I'm going to roll.
So before you roll, what do you say to him? What do you say to him?
So I say, oh, dear officer, I'm so sorry. I'm afraid my father is going to be very upset when he hears about this. And it's hard being a single woman on your own in the city sometimes. And
well, if I had a daughter like you, I'd be very upset myself, I should think.
Well, and she begins to cry a little bit, just one little tear just sort of artfully falling down her face and says, well, yes, I suppose that father would probably agree with you, but we can only do the best we can, sir. And I really am doing the best that I can, and alone in the world, I've no one, no family nearby, nothing. Father's been gone for quite some time, several months, missing in Papua New Guinea, last we heard, and it's been rather a difficult time, and I am very, very sorry, and of course I'll pay for any damage. I always do. And I'm going to roll that charm.
Mate. Oh.
That's a success. It's 46 out of...
If you spend 14 luck, we could avoid potential homicide.
I will absolutely spend that 14 luck.
I was just going to jump on him.
Yeah. No, I have 58, so I'm going to spend 14 of that.
And he says, it's a good thing, miss, that I am such a soft-hearted individual.
Oh.
My wife just treats me like a doormat and, well... In any case...
Oh, you poor man. I'm so sorry to hear that. You know, it's...
You've melted my heart with that tale of, Oh, a very sad tale. I think I'm going to cry myself. Now, listen.
She pats him. There.
Your neighbour is very, very upset. I think he has to be... He's going to have to be taken to the hospital to have the bean removed from his esophagus.
Oh, that is terrible. Yes.
I do hope you make all necessary efforts to repair the hole, as it were.
Oh, absolutely. And I do have a name and a number for my family's kind of personal physician who will do any kind of follow-up appointments that my upstairs neighbor might need to, you know, post-bean removal.
Very good. And please have that wheelchair returned to the London Hospital as soon as is convenient.
I've just come out of the hospital.
That was always our intention.
Are you now like an 80-year-old woman? Is that what Rita's pretending to be now?
I've had facial jaw reconstruction.
She's had a terrible time of it.
As opposed to what other kind of jaw reconstruction?
Here's me thinking we're going to get to the climax. I think we are even further away than we were last week. So with that, the policeman sort of just shaking his head, leaves your apartment and closes the door, and you hear his footsteps going back down the staircase and out the street. And can we leave you now? Can we just leave you to what? And we can just, you can just do whatever you need to do for the next few hours.
Hey, listen, the policeman's entirely your fault, Andy. I lay that completely at your door. It's nothing to do with us. Take us down. You want to take us down the bloody station? Get out.
I think the fumble disguise roll.
Over our dead bodies, you're taking us down the station.
The neighbor could have been not home, and that would have been fine.
Verisimilitude. I'll give you verisimilitude.
I just, you know, there's got to be a few complications. Got to be a few complications. So let's cut now, perhaps, to Milton and Emery being back at Watson's Antiquities. Let's say, Emery, you're there pouring something into a glass of some kind. What's Mel Nippenay up to right now?
Oh, I imagine sitting on a shelf on a pile of very expensive first editions, licking her ass vigorously and noisily.
With gusto.
Yes.
Gusto.
And you see a very pale-looking Milton kind of almost stumble in through the door, and you see that he's got some improvised bandage around his hands as he comes in.
Wheezing and injured...
Oh. Milton, are you all right? You look like you've been through the wars.
I've had a terrible time of it. I've been hijacked by a gentleman in a carriage, told that I am to commit murder about the city. And I believe I just had my first potential victim introduce herself to me. Give me some of that. What are you drinking?
Gin, of course. Yes, yes. I think teacup all right, yes.
I'll have a glass. And can you put an olive in it?
As it says, pouring the dregs of some tea out.
Several olives.
Yes. Yeah, thanks. Yes, yes. I'm sure there are some olives around here somewhere. But for now, we can gin.
What are we going to do, Emery?
I would suggest... The first stage is to drain that glass, then after that, we'll refill it, repeat the process a couple more times, and then, you must tell me in greater detail as to what precisely happened there. Do you need medical attention for those hands?
I don't know. Just the gin will be fine for now. Just keep those coming.
Oh, yes.
I'd love to see Emery just try a first aid roll. Oh, actually, you're pretty good at first aid, I've just realised. Oh, dear.
I believe the wounds are... I hope they're superficial. I wasn't going to have to close up shop.
Yes. At the very least, we should disinfect those.
Gin, I guess.
Let's anaesthetise you first, and then we'll move on to the disinfectant. And until then, yeah.
You're a good man in a tight corner.
Come on, Milton. You can make the freshest blood sausage yet.
Turning myself into... Into sausage, yes.
Into sausage.
Really throwing yourself into your work.
Oh.
Yes, I think perhaps my evening has been not as strange as yours, maybe slightly more positive. I believe I may be able to get us to the auction tomorrow evening.
Yes, I could do with some good news.
Yes, I have befriended our new South African acquaintance. He is quite a character. He has some rather startling views on astronomy, which I was of half a mind to research when I came back here, but then I thought, on reflection, I would rather not know. But yes, he will be telephoning or sending a telegram, or I'm not entirely sure of the method of communication, but he will be alerting us tomorrow about 6 p.m. once he is aware of the location of the auction himself.
Right, okay. Can I just hide out here until the time of the auction?
Of course. Oh. Of course. Yes, yes. You're quite welcome to the chaise longue. I think Mel Pemberley is quite happy sleeping where she is, but if she does look like she fancies the chaise longue, I would advise you to move.
Well, yes, I know she's no fan of mine.
She can be rather territorial, yes.
And you realise at this moment that Mel Pemberley, she's standing like rigid, muscles taut, staring at Milton with all the hair raised up on her back. She hasn't shown any hostility to Milton in the past, but this is unusual.
Well, that seems to be rather out of character. She may not be the best-tempered cat in the world, but her hostility tends to be more direct than that. I'll go over and give her a little rub behind the ears, very cautiously, because I've got a few scars from where she hasn't proved to be in the mood for that. And what is it, old girl? This is Mr. Blythe. You remember him? He gave you sausage.
And when you say Mr. Blythe, she just reaches out to scratch at your hand. And we'll see whether she makes contact. I reckon she's probably got an 80 in fighting brawl.
Oh, at least, yeah.
Yes, she slices you nicely across the hand, leaving... You don't take any damage, but because this has been... You know, you're completely used to this. But yeah, she draws a nice few droplets of blood. And she hisses at you when you said Milton's name. Mr. Blythe's name.
Well, Milton, it seems I'm going to be getting the first aid kit out after all. Let me tend to my hand first of all, and then yours.
Okay, I'll just stay away from the cat. I've had an eventful enough day so far. I don't want to be tangling with your moggy.
Yes, probably for the best. And I'll scurry into the storeroom where we keep what is laughably referred to as the first aid kit, which I think is a biscuit tin that's got a few rolls of gauze in it and a couple of safety pins and a suspiciously half-empty bottle of surgical spirit.
Of course. I was waiting for that. With Gordon's. Half ripped off Gordon's label on it. Okay, yeah. So when you come back, you see that Mel Pemberley has now kind of retreated and is sitting on the highest shelf on the wall of the bookshelves on the west wall of the shop. And she's just in a low crouch and she's not taking her eyes off Milton at all. Seems like whatever's going on, Mel Pemberley is no longer particularly keen on poor old Milton.
Put the biscuit tin down on the desk.
So, do you want to make that first aid roll?
Yes, and while I'm tending to Milton's wounds, I'll just look up at Mel Pemberley and say, I do wonder sometimes whether I should get a Buster Palace for her to perch on. Yes, let's take a look at those hands.
Okay, so let's see. I don't think anyone's ever done a first aid attempt, so not in this scenario.
Yeah. I get the impression I'm lagging a bit, by the way. Apologies if that's the case.
Yeah, a little bit. So, oh dear. Well, yeah, the glass shard obviously must have gone deeper than you thought. And yes, you're not going to be able to really aid.
Using a pair of tweezers to try to pick them out. But maybe, I don't know, maybe some of those glass shards or those shards of stone or whatever that I'm picking out of the wound. Maybe some of them look a little bit like teeth.
Excellent.
I was just wondering if it might be time for me to make a sanity roll if I, given the events.
Yeah, I think in the moment everything was all too surreal, but now you're thinking about what terrible fate lies in store for you, Milton. Yeah, you can definitely make a sanity roll.
Looking at these bizarre wounds as well.
That remind you so much of your dark master.
There we go. Oh.
Oh, there's a fail. Yeah, let's have a d4 for that.
Okay.
Let's have a d4.
One.
No. Just the one. Just the one.
Are you quite all right, Milton? You look like you've seen a ghost.
Oh,
Would you believe me if I said I'd been in a carriage with the Ripper himself?
I would say that it's not the strangest thing I've heard today.
Well, yes, yes, you have been hanging around with me for a bit, haven't you? I don't know what's happening. Dr. Emery, just, yeah, I don't know what I'm being pulled into.
This all obviously did begin with your little encounter with the beefsteaks. Well, it has proved to be quite a useful connection you've had recently, particularly with the Birgit von Kant situation. The more you tap into this association, the more it does seem to be having an effect on you. I wonder if it's time to perhaps consider trying to do something about this. I feel, I don't know, there does seem to be some connection with that medallion of yours.
A medallion, yes. I almost completely forgot that I never take it off. And just...
Yes. I must admit, I hadn't quite made the connection myself until I saw you use it in the manner you did it at the Von Gant residence. And it's been preying on my mind a little bit since then. I know that it is quite a precious artifact to you, and it is clearly of academic and occult interest, but I do rather wonder whether we should destroy it.
Well, steady on. You did say it was useful, me having the connection with the... and everything. Let's not be hasty.
Yes, I do understand it. Sometimes there are sources of strength that we draw upon which perhaps are not always entirely within our best interests in the long run, says Emery, pouring himself another gin. But I still feel that perhaps the time has come for you to face what is happening to you.
No, I was just going to say, I'm going to back away. I assume I'm in a seat, so I will get up, back away from Emery. I will pull out the medallion, look at it, consider removing it, but I'm wondering what I'm experiencing while I attempt to do that.
Well, you feel an overwhelming urge to keep hold of this at all costs, Milton. This medallion is somehow intertwined with you. You know, if someone was to try and take it off you, you would try and kill them. Death would be the only answer.
Surely this is the moment when the ladies turn up at the bookshop again.
Exactly. At which point the door opens and two very fancy looking ladies... I'm not sure why they're getting dressed the day before, but maybe they're just trying it out. Maybe it's a dress rehearsal. Well, two very elegant, and Rita scrubbed up real nice, and they come in.
I think Emery stands up and says, "Ah, Miss Wally, I almost didn't recognise you for a moment, and who might your friend be?"
Oh, darling, don't you recognise Rita? She cleans up lovely, doesn't she?
Dr. Emery, look at this. And I'm going to stand up, and all the guns clatter out of my lap from underneath the thing.
Oh, no, darling.
Ah, yes, that is Rita. Right, of course.
I'm going to take advantage of the distraction and put the amulet away.
Why is Dr. Milton flashing his fancy necklace around?
Oh, no reason. Talking of fancy, look at you. Incredible transformation.
She does look rather nice, I have to say.
You've done remarkable work, Wally. It's incredible.
I'm feeling better.
I'm something of a stylist. Oh, thank you. I don't like to toot my own horn, but toot toot.
At just that moment, another figure appears at the door, and the door opens, and standing there is someone you haven't seen in a while. It's Mr. Dives. Mr. Dives has returned. The uncongenial, I love that word, the uncongenial Mr. Dives is there, and he has a rather, well, sour expression on his face, and he says, "Well, good that you're all here. I've been hearing all kinds of nonsense in the last couple of days. Could you care to tell me what on earth you've been getting up to?"
Mr. Dives, very good to see you. Hey, what sort of nonsense have you been hearing? I think the fact that you refer to it as nonsense probably means you've just answered your own question, but what type of nonsense are we talking about here?
Well, let me count the incidents, to the best of my knowledge at least. An assault on a manservant, breakage of windows and properties, all manner of scuffling down at the river.
You want to see my stomach?
Interference in the conducting of day-to-day business of other booksellers and rivals. Now, I am not one to stand on tradition or anything, but there are certain standards that we must keep to. Don't you agree, Dr. Watson?
Mr. Dives, forgive me if I'm wrong, but you have employed us to procure a book for you, and you were not terribly fussy about the methods before. If you were terribly fussy about the methods, you would have arranged to attend this auction yourself and try to arrange a much more traditional purchase, but instead you came to us to do the things that you yourself are not prepared to do. I think it is a poor form on your part to complain when we do those things.
Well, my reputation is not what it was 5 days ago, and the only thing that has changed since then is my employment of the four of you. Well, the three of you and, well, who's this? He says, pointing at Wally.
Oh, hello, darling. I'm Astrid W. Vandermeer, but you can call me Wally. Absolutely everybody does.
Vandermeer. I believe I know your father. Anyway, that aside, my reputation's in tatters. I mean, blamed for all manner of...
Mister, in which case, I suppose a man of your forthrightness should... what is the common parlance? Kick back against some of these complaints, because whether or not there's any truth in them, and it sounds like there are some half-truths there, we are not doing scurrilous things in your name. We are not advertising your involvement, and... You should not, through any normal means, be associated with any of these malfeasances. So if these are reflecting back on you in any way, that does suggest that whoever is doing that is using this as a pretext to try to attack your good name without any real foundation.
Well, be that as it may, I must insist that there is no more horseplay between now and tomorrow evening. None whatsoever.
Mr. Dives, I will present you with a choice here, and this is your choice to make. Will you tie our hands behind our back and leave us powerless to carry out the task you have given us, and thereby pretty much guarantee its failure? Or will you give us carte blanche to exercise your request in the means necessary?
I'll tell you what.
I'll put it another way, Mr. Dives. Do you want this damnable book?
Of course I want the damnable book, but I do not want my...
Then I suggest you leave it to the professionals you have hired to get you the damnable book.
No, you're a very direct man, Dr. Watson. I admire that, but you have to understand, if Drummle gets his lawyers onto me, there could be endless trouble. He's threatening legal action for me for interference with his business, and I am the target of that.
Mr. Drummle took it upon himself to interfere with our business first of all. We retaliated simply to let him know that this was not how business was done in London. If he has chosen to make an issue of this with you, that just simply shows him to be a cad of the worst sort.
Well, can we at least be discreet, then?
I fear not. This is no longer a matter in which discretion serves a useful purpose.
At which point the telephone rings... on your desk, very loudly.
I'm going to jump and spill my gin.
Miss Rita, would you do the honours, please?
Okay. So Rita goes over to the telephone and she says, "Hello, Rare Books."
Telephone voice.
Yeah. And there's a woman on the other end and she says,
"Please can you tell Mr. Blythe and Professor Watson that I have the Castries and he may not last too long, so they better get here quick."
Okay, thanks very much. Goodbye.
And I think that is where we will end the session.
We'll try to make it a discreet human sacrifice, shall we?
Excellent.
An apple cart, a broken heart, I'm in anything, but he'd rather sing. Toodle-loo-ma-loo-ma, toodle-loo-ma-loo-ma, toodle-lie.
It's thank you time again. And as usual, I wanted to thank all of our backers at all levels. We can't do the show without you. Well, we could, but it wouldn't be anywhere near as good, because with your support and help, we can do all of the extra things that we want to do. I also want to thank all the players, who I realized I haven't really been thanking in our thanks section. So thank you to all the players. I love you all dearly, and I hope that we can continue doing Grizzly Peaks far, far into the future until we're old and grey and can't remember what happened in the last session. Actually, I think that kind of applies to me already, but for the rest of you, you'll get there soon, don't worry. And if you do like our show, which I assume you are if you've listened all the way to the end, then do come and join the fun at patreon.com/grizzlypeaks. Look forward to seeing you.
Umbrellas to men, umbrellas to men.